As you keep expanding your vision, you make up new rules to cover that. As you keep enlarging your idea about yourself, you create new do's and don'ts, yeses and no's to encircle that. These are the boundaries that hold in something which cannot be held in. You cannot hold in you because you are as boundless as the universe. Yet you can create a concept about your boundless self by imagining and then accepting boundaries. In a sense, this is the only way you can know yourself as anything in particular. That which is boundless is boundless. That which is limitless is limitless. It cannot exist anywhere because it is everywhere. If it is everywhere, it is nowhere in particular. God is everywhere. Therefore, God is nowhere in particular because to be somewhere in particular, God would have to not be somewhere else, which is not possible for God. There's only one thing that is not possible for God, and that is for God to not be God. God cannot not be, nor can God not be like itself. God cannot un-God itself. I am everywhere, and that's all there is to it. And since I am everywhere, I am nowhere. And if I am nowhere, where am I? Now, here.
I love it. You made this point before, but I love it, so I let you go on.
That's very kind of you. And do you understand it better now? Do you see how you have created your ideas of right and wrong simply to define who you are? Do you see that without these definitions, boundaries, you are nothing? And do you see that, like me, you keep changing the boundaries as you change your ideas of who you are?
Well, I get what you're saying, but it doesn't seem that I've changed the boundaries, my own personal boundaries, very much. To me, it's always been wrong to kill. It's always been wrong to steal. It's always been wrong to hurt another. The largest concepts by which we govern ourselves have been in place since the beginning of time, and you know, most human beings agree on them.
Then why do you have war?
Well, because there will always be some who break the rules. There's a rotten apple in every barrel.
What I'm going to tell you now and in the passages which follow may be very difficult for some people to understand and accept. It is going to violate much of what is held as truth in your present thought system. Yet I cannot let you go on living with these constructions if this dialogue is to serve you. So we must now, in this second book, meet some of these concepts head on. It's going to be bumpy going here for a while. Are you ready?
I think so, yes. Thanks for the warning, but what is it that's so dramatic or difficult to understand or accept that you're going to tell me?
I'm going to tell you this. There are no rotten apples. There are only people who disagree with your point of view on things. People who construct a different model of the world. I'm going to tell you this. No persons do anything inappropriate, given their model of the world.
Well, then their model is all messed up. I know what's right and wrong, and because some other people don't, that doesn't make me crazy, because I do. They're the ones who are crazy.
I'm sorry to say, that's exactly the attitude which starts wars.
I know. I was doing that on purpose. I was just repeating here what I've heard many other people say. But how can I answer like that? I mean, how can I answer people who talk that way? What could I say?
You could tell them that people's ideas of right and wrong change and have changed over and over again from culture to culture, time period to time period, religion to religion, place to place, even from family to family and person to person.
You could point out to them that what many people considered right at one time, burning people at the stake for what was considered witchcraft as an example, is considered wrong today. You could tell them that a definition of right and wrong is a definition established not only by time, but also by simple geography. You could allow them to notice that some activities on your planet, prostitution for instance, are illegal in one place and just a few miles down the road, legal in another. And so whether a person is judged as having done something wrong is not a matter of what that person has actually done, but of where he has done it. Now, I'm going to repeat something I said in Book One, and I know that it was very, very difficult for some to grasp, to understand. Hitler went to heaven.
I'm not sure people are ready for this.
The purpose of this program, and of all the books in the trilogy we are creating, is to create readiness. Readiness for a new paradigm, a new understanding, a larger view, a grander idea.
Well, I'm going to have to ask the questions here that I know so many people are thinking and wanting to ask. How could a man like Hitler have gone to heaven? Every religion in the world, I would think everyone, has declared him condemned and sent straight to hell.
First, he could not have gone to hell because hell doesn't exist. Therefore, there is only one place left to which he could have gone. But that begs the question. The real issue is whether Hitler's actions were wrong. Yet I have said over and over again that there is no right or wrong in the universe. A thing is not intrinsically right or wrong. A thing simply is. Now, your thought that Hitler was a monster is based on the fact that he ordered the killing of millions of people, correct?
Obviously, yes.
Yet what if I told you that what you call death is the greatest thing that could happen to anyone? What then?
I'd find that hard to accept.
You think that life on earth is better than life in heaven? I tell you this, at the moment of your death, you will realize the greatest freedom, the greatest peace, the greatest joy, and the greatest love you have ever known. Shall we therefore punish Brer Fox for throwing Brer Rabbit into the briar patch?
You're ignoring the fact that however wonderful life after death may be, our lives here should not be ended against our will. We came here to achieve something, to experience something, to learn something. And it's not right that our lives be cut short by some maniacal hoodlum with insane ideas.
First of all, you're not here to learn anything. Life is not a school. And your purpose here is not to learn. It is to remember. And on your larger point, life is often cut short by many things, a hurricane, an earthquake.
That's different. You're talking about an act of God.
Every event is an act of God. Do you imagine that an event could take place if I did not want it to? Do you think that you could so much as lift your little finger if I chose for you not to? You can do nothing if I'm against it. Yet let us continue to explore this idea of wrongful death together. Is it wrong for a life to be cut short by disease?
Wrong isn't a word that applies to here. Those are natural causes. That's not the same as a human being, like Hitler, murdering people.
What about an accident? A stupid accident?
Same thing. It's unfortunate, tragic, but that's the will of God. We can't peer into God's mind and find out why these things happen. We ought not even try, because God's will is immutable and incomprehensible. To seek to unravel divine mystery is to lust for knowledge beyond our ken. It is sinful.
How do you know?
Because if God wanted us to understand all of this, we would. The fact that we don't, can't, is evidence that it is God's will that we don't.
I see. The fact that you don't understand it is evidence of God's will. The fact that it happens is not evidence of God's will.
Well, I guess I'm not very good at explaining some of this, but I know what I believe.
Do you believe in God's will, that God is all-powerful?
Yes.
Except where Hitler was concerned. What happened there was not God's will.
No.
How can that be?
Well, Hitler violated the will of God.
Now, how do you think he could do that if my will is all-powerful?
You allowed him to.
If I allowed him to, then it was my will that he should.
It would seem that way. But what possible reason could you have? No. It was your will that he have free choice, and it was his will that he do what he did.
You're so close on this. So close. You're right, of course. It was my will that Hitler, that all of you, have free choice. But it is not my will that you be punished unceasingly, unendingly, if you do not make the choice I want you to make. If that were the case, how free have I made your choice? Are you really free to do what you want if you know you'll be made to suffer unspeakably if you do not do what I want? What kind of choice is that?
It isn't a question of punishment. It's just natural law. It's simply a question of consequences.
I see you've been schooled well in all the theological constructions that allow you to hold me as a vengeful god without making me responsible for it. But who made these natural laws? And if we can agree that I must have put them into place, why would I put into place such laws, then give you the power to overcome them? If I didn't want you affected by them, if it was my will that my wonderful beings never should suffer, why would I create the possibility that you could? And then, why would I continue to tempt you day and night to break the laws I've set down?
You don't tempt us. The devil does.
There you go again, making me not responsible. Don't you see that the only way you can rationalize your theology is to render me powerless? Do you understand that the only way your constructions make sense is if mine don't? Are you really comfortable with the idea of a God who creates a being whose actions it cannot control?
I didn't say you can't control the devil. You can control everything. You're God. It's just that you choose not to. You allow the devil to tempt us, to try to win our souls.
But why? Why would I do that if I don't want to have you not return to me?
Because you want us to come to you out of choice, not because there's no choice. Look, you set up heaven and hell so there could be a choice, so we could act out of choosing, not out of simply following a path because there's no other.
I can see how you've come to this idea. That's how I've set it up in your world, so you think that's how it must be in mine. In your reality, good cannot exist without bad, so you believe it must be the same in mine. I tell you this, there is no bad where I am, and there is no evil. There is only the all of everything, the oneness, and the awareness, the experience of that. Mine is the realm of the absolute, where one thing does not exist in relationship to another, but quite independent of anything. Mine is the place where all there is love.
And there are no consequences to anything we think, say, or do on Earth?
Oh, but there are consequences. Look around you.
No, I mean after death.
There is no death. Life goes on forever and ever. Life is. You simply change form.
All right, have it your way. After we change form.
After you change form, consequences cease to exist. There is just knowing. Consequences are an element of relativity. They have no place in the absolute because they depend on linear time and sequential events. These do not exist in the realm of the absolute. In that realm, there is naught but peace and joy and love. In that realm, you will know at last the good news.
That your devil does not exist. That you are who you always thought you were. Goodness and love. Your idea that you might be something else has come from an insane outer world causing you to act insanely. An outer world of judgment and condemnation. Others have judged you, and from their judgments you have judged yourself. Now you want God to judge you, and I will not do it. And because you cannot understand a God who will not act as humans would, you're lost. Your theology is your attempt to find yourself again.